Okay, I'm going to be speaking about movies, or at least our approach to watching movies. Can I say, is there anyone here who never watches television or movies? Is there anyone here who seldomly, okay, who watches, let's say, on average, one movie a month? So I can just see sort of the level of what I'm talking to. Okay, so it's quite a low movie population. Okay. All right, let's start. Okay, let's just open in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, thank you for this opportunity to be gathering and to learn more about how to live out our lives practically as believers in this fallen world. Help us, Lord, to have our minds transformed by your word so that we can reclaim the kingdom for the Lord Jesus Christ and live unto his name and honor. Amen. Okay, 2005 was, in terms of movies, in terms of money-making, quite a low year in comparison to previous years. What do you think was the top grossing movie of 2005? Which one? King Kong. No, nowhere near. Star Wars, yes. Star Wars. At the moment, it's Star Wars. If you look at those movies, with one or two exceptions, what type of movies are they? What sort of genre of movies are they? Fantasy, big time. And other, what else? And children's movies. If you go to the top 100, you're going to find that 25% of your best-selling movies are children's movies. That includes both the animated and the non-animated things specifically designed for children. Okay, 25% of the top 100. About the same amount goes for fantasy. And needless to say, America is the biggest consumer of the fantasy movies. And now here's the surprising one. 35% is your sort of entertainment type of things. About 10% is your action adventure type of stuff where there's a bit of, you know, violence and whatever in. But, you know, I don't necessarily know what title you want to put to action adventure, whatever, but in that type of category, about 10%. And only less than 5% are your heavy age restricted movies. Now, I've been doing this talk at these camps for about 5 years, and I want to tell you that that last category over the past 5 years has constantly been decreasing. From about 10% 5 years ago, it's less than 5% now of your best-selling movies are in that sort of goer category. But now this begs a question. If 95% of your movies that make money are not your sex, drugs, and rock and roll and violent type of things, how come 95% of the movies that are released are about sex, drugs, and rock and roll and violence? And the answer is, Hollywood is not just interested in your money. They are also interested in your mind. And now, to what extent it's a deliberate ploy, and to what extent it's a case of just writing and scripting a movie from the worldview that they are in, which is a humanist worldview, which basically means me, myself, and I as a center and the measure of everything. To what extent it's deliberate and to what extent it's almost a subconscious way of scripting and filming a movie, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that they are changing our minds. Unfortunately, even Christians' minds, because as Christians, sometimes we are the most naive people on earth because we don't think. Now, what is the solution to this? Well, some people's solution is, don't watch movies, don't watch TV. Now, I don't have a TV in my house. Well, my housemate has in his bedroom, but I don't have it in my house. And I don't have a problem with people saying, I'm not watching movies and I'm not watching TV. If you've been convicted of that, you must be true to your conscience. But just remember, Jesus said, it's not what goes into a man that makes him unclean, it's what comes out of a man. Our hearts are already evil. And yes, there's no need to go and deliberately put yourself in the line of temptation and deliberately put yourself in the line of filth. But that doesn't deal with the problem. That deals with the symptom of the problem. Our problem is actually our hearts. And we need to have our hearts changed and our minds renewed by the Word of God. So I'm assuming most of us watch movies, but I would like to think that we're going to be critical when we watch movies, and that we're going to ask some intelligent questions, which, as I'm a teacher, and you know, intelligent questions is a bit of a rarity, I can tell you, and I quite enjoy it when people ask intelligent questions. So I thought I'd write down some intelligent questions here. Now, I only wrote down 8 because after 8 the page was full, but there are more. Now, you could choose any, but the ones that I want to focus on this morning are, in movies, if Jesus Christ is referred to, how is he referred to? Now, this might shock you, but you do find the odd exception where he's actually referred to in a positive light, even today. But let me emphasize, it's the exception. It's not the rule. And finding one or two noble exceptions doesn't make the rule true. Now, for instance, in movies like Spider-Man, the first one, this is a brilliant movie, this. And there's at one spot where Peter Parker's aunt has been, she's praying the Lord's Prayer on her bed. And her husband has been murdered, and she's looking at the photograph of her murdered husband, and she's praying, "Forgive us of our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against them." And the way it's done in the movie, there's no snideness, there's no ridicule. She's being very sincere, praying to help her forgive the murderers of her husband. In Raiders of the Lost Ark, you'll find the character of, is it Sean Connery playing the character? He's an archaeologist. His son comes up and blasphemes Christ, and he actually slaps his son through the face and says, "You will not use God's name in vain." Now, those are noble exceptions. But you do find the majority of movies are not like that. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, now I've got to be careful here because I saw two of my friends here. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt movie this year. Black comedy. On the one hand, it's funny. On the other hand, it's not funny. The level of blasphemy in it is actually quite high. And I'm not just talking low-level blasphemy. It's really high-powered stuff that you expect a lightning bolt to descend in a minute upon you. In things such as Million Dollar Baby, Clint Eastwood's Oscar award from, was it 2004, I think. Brilliant, brilliant movie. With one blasphemous reference in it that hits you like a lightning bolt because it goes on and on and on, by the character Morgan Freeman. So you need to be aware of how Jesus is often dragged through the mud in movies. How is Christianity portrayed in films? We need to remember that even when it comes to so-called Christian movies that Hollywood produces, remember by and large, these movies, while they may be based on Christian ideas or Christian history, are not necessarily made by a Christian. Now that's important. Because Hollywood has latched onto the idea that there's a Christian market out there that they can get money from. So they're going for the market. Now, because Christians are naive, we just sit back and accept it as, oh yeah, this is fact. No. Now again, to what extent it's true, I don't know, or what extent it's deliberate, I don't know. But I'm convinced that there is an element of, let's change the way Christians think by giving them a Christian movie, but just alter it here and there. And we need to be aware of that temptation. Now, movies such as Cromwell and Luther generally are good, but there are aspects in the movie Luther, which I see you'll be watching later in the week. There are aspects in there which are not factual. There are aspects in there which are distorted in terms of historical facts. Now, I'm going to be giving you a review as well, one on Luther and one on the Passion of the Christ that was published in my church magazine that you can read through in your own time as well. But Christians need to be careful of how their faith is portrayed. You can't accept history as it is because that's how you see it in a movie. And I also want to, a movie such as The Passion of the Christ is often touted as a Christian movie. You need to remember that Mel Gibson is not just a devout Catholic, he is a devout member of a Catholic sect. Okay, and that's important because he based his movie not so much on the Gospels as it did upon a revelation that a nun had and written down and wrote as a book. So we need to be aware of that. Now, there are positive aspects to the movie, but you can't just accept the whole thing is valid. Okay, so we need to be aware of what we watch. You know, movies such as City of Angels, very sweet little movie, but it gives you a wrong understanding of a teaching of what angel life is all about in terms of from a biblical perspective. Same with Bruce Almighty. You know, Bruce Almighty is one of those things that I'm surprised that a lightning bolt didn't strike the producers of that thing, because to portray somebody taking the place of God for a week because God is tired and wants to go on a holiday, well, you're playing with your soul's eternal destiny. It's serious stuff. How are other movies, how are other religions portrayed? You know, in the world of being politically correct, you've got to be careful of how you come across as to what other religions are all about. And the two noble exceptions are The Killing Fields, which really shows you the horror of communism, and a movie such as Not Without My Daughter, which is about a woman going with an American husband who has an Islamic background, going back to their home in, I think it's Iran. And when he gets there, he changes because it's his country, and he starts treating her according to Islamic rules. So those two movies actually expose other religions for what they are. But they're few and far between. Usually you find movies that will tell you how wonderful other religions are. In movies, do actions have consequences or not? Now this is a very important thing in terms of especially going to children's movies. If you go to movies such as The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and Lord of the Rings to a certain extent, there are consequences. In The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, you find one of the little boys betrays his family, and there's a price to pay, and the price must be paid, and the price is paid. That contrasts to something like Harry Potter, where because Harry is Harry Potter, he can do quite frankly whatever he wants. He can break as many rules of the magic school as he wants, and there is never a punishment laid upon him because he's Harry Potter, and he gets away with close-on murder. Is historical truth respected? Well, I mean, mostly the answer is no. I couldn't find any positive examples where it is, because there aren't movies where history is respected as history and where it's not reinterpreted. Movies like Troy, the whole historical setup of Troy has been changed completely in the movie. Last year's movie, Alexander, where he's presented as a homosexual warrior. Pocahontas, now if you didn't know, why is Pocahontas famous? Because she's the first Native American Indian to be baptized. That's why. Now, if you didn't know that from the movie, well, you'd be forgiven for not knowing it, because it doesn't feature anywhere in the movie. It's just about this wonderful love relationship between this Indian and this European chappie. But it's not about the fact that she's a born-again believer, and that's why she has become part of American folklore. So history is chronically interpreted in movies. The type of questions which I'm particularly interested in looking at are the following ones. What view is taken of family life in the movies? Now these are the dangerous ones, because things such as blasphemy is in your face. It's loud and it's clear. Things such as obvious violence and obvious sex are loud and clear. It's in your face. But there's a lot of subtle things in movies that we're not aware of, especially in children's movies, because you don't expect falsehood in children's movies. You expect it in Basic Instinct, but you don't expect it in a children's movie or in a comedy, and your guard is down, and that's exactly when you're at your weakest. So for instance, in movies like Batman Begins and Spider-Man, there's generally a very good family concept coming out. Batman Begins is about a daddy and mommy and a little boy. Obvious love between mommy, daddy and the boy. Parents are murdered, and then there's this wonderful male mentor that looks after the little boy. Very positive family concepts coming out. I was surprised that Batman is not one of 2005's best-selling movies, because it's really a good movie. The same with Spider-Man. The biblical concept of adoption comes out very positively in Spider-Man, where he is adopted by his aunt and his uncle. Then you get movies like Harry Potter and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. The Harry Potters, in terms of family life, are very dangerous. I mean, the witchcraft thing is one thing, and it's obvious. But the family things in Harry Potter are not that obvious unless you're looking out for it. Do you know that not one teacher in Harry Potter's school is married? Now, of course you find unmarried people. I'm one of them. And of course, in any community, you are going to find someone that's not married, or someone that's divorced, or someone that's widowed. But when the entire school is not married, that's obviously a deliberate thing that's built into the movie. If you look at Harry Potter's adoptive family, they're fat, stupid, lazy, snide, thick, and just horrible people. But then you look at Harry's friend. What's that little redhead boy's name? Ronald. Look at his family. In the movie, you see mommy, daddy sitting at the breakfast table with the whole family. Mommy's cooking bacon and eggs, and they're laughing and joking together. Great family life. So the roles are totally inverted in terms of what the Bible understands to be a good family. Here's the family that's into witchcraft. That's this wholesome, enjoyable family life. But Harry's family is this nasty, snide, horrible environment. So the whole concept of family life has been inverted in that movie. And most people are not aware of that because they're looking, they're so focused on the magic, which is there and which you mustn't ignore, that other aspects, more subtle aspects, go by the way. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, it's not nice to see husband and wife literally trying to kill each other and needing to go for marriage counseling and kicking and trying to kill each other by shooting is one thing, but punching each other and kicking each other and that, you know, just it's really sort of leaves you with a knot in your stomach. But your fantasy movies are another source where family life is often inverted. Lord of the Rings. Now again, I don't know what the book is like because I haven't got the patience to read through something like this. And I know that it's again made by people that are not Christians. But the movies in Lord of the Rings, you are going to search long and hard to find a complete family. You finally find it right at the end where one of the little hobbits is married and eventually has two little children. That's about it. You always find a king with his children or a queen with her children, but never mommy, daddy, and children together. If you go to The Matrix, you're going to find the same thing. Brilliant series of movies. But again, with the exception of number two, I think, where you have an Indian family, you're never going to find a complete family in that movie. Now, this to me is not incidental. To me, it's actually deliberately built into these movies. You see, because in The Matrix, instead of family life, what you have is the camaraderie on the crew of the ship. You will find that one of the characters in the crew says to somebody, "This is my brother. Why is he my brother? Not because we have the same parents, but because, to quote, we are both born into freedom." So there's a redefining of what a family life is. In Lord of the Rings, what replaces the family? Well, in the first one, obviously, it's the fellowship. Now, that's how it comes out. I don't know if it comes out that way in the book, but that's how it comes out in the movie. So we need to be aware of replacements of family life in movies. Another one of my favorite questions, how are men portrayed in movies? You get the odd noble exception. I mean, Finding Nemo was one of the top grossing movies of all time. It's like one of the top 10 movies. And you've got this little clownfish trying to find his baby son. Going against his rather quiet personality, but actually, that's the point. He's going against his quiet personality and stepping out of his comfort zone, and daddy is going to find his lost son. And it's not incidental that this is Disney's best-selling movie ever, because the concept of family is very obvious in it. Then you get other movies, like Ice Age, where you've got to be aware of yourself because it pushes homosexuality. You find Sid the Sloth saying to Mammy the Mammon, as they're carrying this little lost baby to wherever, "Oh, isn't it cute? Us two bachelors raising a child." And then later on in the movie, now that might be one line which may not mean anything on its own, but later on in the movie you find there's two rhinoceri. The one is Frank, I can't remember his friend's name. Giving each other's daisies, very effeminate, giving each other daisies and then having a jacuzzi together. And you need to watch out about things like that in movies. This year's top Oscar contender for Best Movie and Best Actor and all the rest is, sorry, the title is wrong there, is Brokeback Mountain, not Ridge, Brokeback Mountain. What is it about? It's about a love story between homosexual Westerners, set in the American Western cowboy movie, but it's a homosexual love story. And it's this year's top Oscar contender. But often men are just not there, like in the Toy Stories. There's just no daddy anywhere. Or if you go to the animated movies, with the noble exception of The Lion King and Nemo, where their daddy actually is prepared to die, in the case of The Lion King, for their child, you will find Disney portraying men, or fathers especially, as stupid, as small, squat, fat, and just thick. Now think about it. Beauty and the Beast. Her father is a short, fat, squat, bumbling, blithering idiot of a professor that explodes everything in sight. Aladdin doesn't have a daddy or a mommy, in all fairness. But his girlfriend, Jasmine, her father is the short, fat Shah, who's an idiot. You go to a movie like The Little Mermaid. Their daddy is a raving tyrant. He doesn't know how to control his little 13-year-old daughter who throws temper tantrums, so he throws one too and destroys everything around him. And you can go through, with the exception of Lion King and Nemo, you can go through almost every single Disney movie and you will see that the father figure is portrayed either as a blithering idiot or he's just not there. Now again, that's not deliberate. Now if it was one movie where daddy was portrayed as a twit, that's fine. But when it's every single movie, then you can bet your bottom dollar it's not incidental, it's deliberate. They're trying to convey a message. What view is taken of sex? Now again, in Spider-Man, in my big fat Greek wedding, the absence of sex is obvious. It actually hits you. Good grief. Peter Parker and his little girl didn't sleep together. My big fat Greek wedding, she actually didn't sleep with this guy until they were married. And the absence is obvious. It's actually so obvious that when you think about it, you think, you know, when you watch movies and these love stories, the movie actually conditions you to want them to get into bed together. And when it doesn't happen, you notice it because isn't that the way it always happens? And then, of course, you know, in movies such as, you know, The Bonds and The Bourne Identities, you know, I mean, sex is like, you know, instead of playing cards, you know, we've got 2 hours to kill. Okay, instead of playing cards or Scrabble, we have sex. And the way in which it's portrayed, again, is, of course, there's never any side effects. You'll notice none of the Bond girls fall pregnant. No, none of the Bond girls have contracted sexually transmitted diseases. There's no consequences. It's not just, you know, sex free for all. It's a case of consequent free sex, which is not realistic. So those are some questions which we can ask. I was very encouraged when I went to a lovely Christian family that I spent a week with in America about 10 years ago. And that was more or less at the time when Star Wars 4, the original one, was re-released. So we were watching it, and it was a little, I think the youngest boy was 5 or 6 or whatever. And so afterwards, Daddy said to him, "Now tell me, Alex, what do you think the Force is? Do you think it's a person? Do you think it's a power? Do you think it's a magnetic field? What do you think it is?" So think. He thinks it's a power for good or evil. Ah. Now tell me, Alex, when we read the Bible, what is God like? Is God a person? Is God a force? Is God a field? No, God is a person. And just through talking through a movie, this little boy could obviously understand that whatever force was spoken about in the movie, it's not the Christian God, it's not the Bible. And I think that Christian parents need to use the art of using movies to evangelize with. It's a great tool. It's a great tool to use in terms of relating to people in the world. People go and watch movies. Go and watch something like Batman. And talk about the wholesomeness of family life in it. Go and watch something such as Spider-Man. And especially number 2, where the two come, boyfriend and girlfriend, come very close together. And then Parker pulls away and says no. Talk about that. It promotes, use it as an evangelistic tool and of upholding biblical values. Now in terms of TV, Ted Baer of the American Movie Guide says, "Whoever controls the media controls the culture." Well, I mean, fewer true words have been spoken. Matthew Broderick, American actor. "I often wonder, do movies influence the world, or do the world influence movies? What's influencing us more than we know is MTV. Ted Turner, who owned CNN up to recently. "Everything we are exposed to influences us. Those violent movies influence us, and the TV programs influence us. The weaker your family is, the more they influence you. It's like pouring gasoline on the fire." Now, I notice it's interesting here that he says, the weaker your family is. Okay, there's a very obvious link between a good, wholesome family life and a how they influence our world. The average child sees 25,000 hours of TV before they leave school. So in other words, at age 18, if you add it all up, 3 hours are spent non-stop on watching TV. So, 3 years. How much time do they spend at school in those 18 hours, in those 18 years? Half that time. How much quality time do they spend with mommy and daddy? Not much. Now, who is influencing this child? Certainly not mommy and daddy. Teenagers watch, on average, two movies. Parents of teenagers watch a movie every 2 months. Teenagers watch it every week. Who's influencing the children? Certainly not mommy and daddy. Before a child leaves school, they would have seen 1 million acts of violence on TV. Half a million sexual acts or references. Adultery versus marital sex in the ratio of 8-1. In other words, sex within a marriage, as far as a child is concerned, is the exception to the rule. It should be the rule. And of course, it's consequentry. I want just quickly just to go through some noble exceptions or some noble excuses. First one is this. I'm old enough to make decisions and watch what I like. Really, age is not the issue. Right and wrong is the issue. You know, I can never understand at parent meetings when parents complain to me, oh, you know, I'm so worried. You know, little Johnny started smoking. I said, really? Don't you smoke? Yeah, but you know, I'm an adult. Says, oh, so at what age will it be okay for you for your son to start smoking? I mean, it's a ludicrous situation. It's the same here. You know, age is not the issue. Right and wrong is the issue. Now, furthermore, the issue is you are not your own. You are Christ's. You are not entitled to do with yourself what you want. You are Christ's property. He has bought you with his blood. We are his. And stop being so selfish. Consider the weaker brother. You know, let's pretend watching something doesn't affect you. Let's pretend for the time being it doesn't affect you. There's somebody else who sees your example and who's going to follow your example, and they could lead that person into the toilet. You know, I'm living in a real world and I can't escape life around me. Really, since when is television or movies really the real world? I mean, you know, when last have you seen a movie where people actually finish a meal? Or go to the toilet? You know, and the amount of swearing and fornication and type of stuff you to find in movies is totally unrealistic. Most people don't talk that way. Most people don't live that way. Concerning music, I just listen to the beat, not the words. Really? So how come you can sing along to every song by heart? Two of my friends gave me a puzzle for my birthday. So this last week I started building a massive 1,500 thing. So I deliberately switched on 5FM. Started at 10 o'clock in the morning and I finished at 8 o'clock that night. I switched it off. Two things struck me. Not one song was ever played twice in those 10 hours. I was quite surprised. Unlike KFM. The next thing that surprised me was the amount of blasphemy and swearing and sexual references in those songs, and blasphemy and swearing in particular, that is not bleeped out anymore. It's just broadcast as is. Now this is morning, noon and night that 5FM broadcasts, and sooner or later it's going to influence you. Garbage in, garbage out. As Christians, we are called to purify not just what other people see in our lives, but we're called to purify our hearts. And we need to guard our hearts. Okay, well, it's fine to whine about things that are wrong. What can we do? What can we do? Well, the first one is, this is going to blow your mind. You can occasionally switch the TV off. You know, with remotes these days, it's really comfortable. You don't even have to get up. You can just switch the remote. And you'll be amazed how much time you waste watching TV. You know, when people tell me, oh, you know, there's nothing on TV, I never watch TV. Really? So why have you got a TV in your house then? If you don't watch it, get rid of it. Now, I want to challenge you. If you watch TV, do a little experiment. Put your TV away for a month. That includes daddy's sport programs and mommy's soaps and the news. And then if you want to, go and switch it on. You'll be horrified as to what you've allowed yourself to become conditioned to. That you don't even see things anymore. You'll be horrified as to what you accept what people say, especially in comedies and soapies, and what people do. If a movie is unacceptable, walk out and write to the distributor or to the Film and Publications Board. Now, strange enough, the Film and Publications Board are actually paid to do a job, so let them work. This includes, by the way, going to watch a children's movie and then the trailer is like some gore filth film that they show. That's not good enough either. If you're going to go watch Narnia, and they're showing you the latest, you know, Sharon Stone movie or whatever as a trailer, that's not good enough. That's not. It has happened. Okay, so complain about those things. You know, we often whine about Muslims, you know, 2% influencing 98% of the country. Well, you know, it's about time we open, as Christians, open our mouths as well. Now, I'm not saying we need to plant bombs and stuff, but what I am saying is we can open our mouths and make it loud and clear so that we don't accept these things. Study the scriptures and biblical principles. If you spend as much time reading the Bible, if you spend as much time in the company of the world watching TV and movies as you do in prayer, I'd be surprised. But most people actually spend more time watching movies and TV than they do in prayer, which is why we think like the world, because we're in the world's company. If you spend more time reading the newspapers than you are reading God's word, well, it's no wonder that you and I think like the world. We are to transform our minds by the scriptures. And if you need a bit of help in getting your mind transformed, there's excellent books there, people. Subscribe to magazines and to things like, you know, Ted Baer's movie guide, on just, it's on internet, just go on there. Things like Answers in Genesis, which will, sort of the whole evolution debate thing, from which virtually everything springs. Subscribe to articles and journals that will help you in exposing the falsehood in the ways of the world. Analyze what you see. Don't fall for the line that everything is neutral. Don't believe that education is neutral. Hollywood is not neutral. It's after your mind. Remember that. If you're a parent, monitor what your child sees. And here's one going to blow your mind, right into the Broadcasting Complaints Commission. Now, you know, this must be the singularly most useless organization in the Republic of South Africa. I've 3 times this year written to them complaining about 5FM DJ's language. Now, you'll be amazed how people can justify sin. The type of answers that they come back with. Yes, it may not be in the best taste, but it's not breaking any law of the country. So swearing and blasphemy is fine. I was totally taken aback at that because I wrote in about Eminem's latest song that 5FM was playing, and I complained about 2 DJs, Nicole Fox and Kevin Fine, because I'm not prepared to even listen anymore to Mark Gilman and Gareth Cliff. But you get the same answers. They're not breaking any law of the country. But anyway, again, they paid to work, so make their life a misery and write into them. What does the Bible say? Again, Jesus called the crowd and said to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a man can make him unclean by going into him. Rather, it is what comes out of a man that makes him unclean. For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, folly." Sounds like reading the newspaper. "All these evils come from inside and make a man unclean." Now again, we're not saying that you must just indiscriminately go and watch anything. But we are saying, even by stopping watching anything, we're not dealing with the problem of sin in our lives. We in many ways are dealing with the symptom, which is not a bad place to start. But the problem is actually our hearts. Romans chapter 12 gives us a command. "Therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy." What is God's mercy? Well, salvation by Jesus Christ. Offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Now notice here what the scripture says. Where does changing our lives start? It doesn't start with changing our actions. It starts with changing our minds, the way we think. And the way we think will influence the way we live. And then as a teacher, my favorite verse, "See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophies which depend upon human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ." Okay, we are called upon to guard our hearts and to guard our minds and not to be dragged away by the philosophies and the standards of this world. As Christians, we are to set the standard for the world. The world is not to set the standard for us.